We now come to motion number two on rail strikes, and I need to inform the House that Mr. Speaker has selected Amendment A in the name of the Leader of the Opposition. Under the terms of the business motion agreed today, the amendment will be moved formally at the end of the debate. I call Secretary of State Grant Shapps to move the motion.
Madam Deputy Speaker, I beg to move the motion standing in my name on the order paper. The railway is one of the nation's greatest legacies. The Industrial Revolution was forged upon it, and for two centuries it's been the means by which we've connected north and south, east and west. It's a proud part of our history. But Madam Deputy Speaker, the truth is the railways in this country have fallen behind the times. When I became Transport Secretary 3 years ago, it was clear our railways were expensive and inefficient, fragmented and unaccountable, and desperately in need of modernising and reform. There were delays to upgrades, collapsing franchises, busy lines operating at the very peak and sometimes beyond their capacity, suffering overcrowding and delays. And some working practices which hadn't changed for decades. As a result, we have a railway today that's struggling to keep pace with modern living, particularly in the wake of the pandemic. Our railways need a new direction. Office workers are working from home more often, and the railway has lost around a fifth of its passengers and a fifth of its income too. The government has kept the railway running when most passengers stayed at home. We kept trains available for key workers, and we protected the brilliant railway workers who managed the track and ran the trains. And so, Madam Deputy Speaker, this government has stepped in. We put our money where our mouth is. We committed £16 billion to support the railways through COVID. That is the equivalent, taxpayer money, that is the equivalent of £600 for every household in this country. Or put another way, that's the equivalent to £160,000 per rail worker in this country. And as a result, I'll tell you what it's to do with, as a result, the trains continued to operate, the industry survived, not a single railway worker had to be furloughed or lost their job, not one, Madam Deputy Speaker. We stepped up. But the honest truth is that this level of subsidy, which, let us not forget, is not the government's money, but taxpayers, simply cannot continue forever. If our railways are to thrive, then things must change. And Madam Deputy Speaker, as I see it, there are four ways to bring that change. First, we could continue to attempt to pump in billions of pounds of taxpayers' money into the system in the same unsustainable way we've been doing for the last 2 years, but that would take money away from the NHS and schools. Second, we could ramp up fares, but that would price working people off our railways completely. Third, we could cut services and lines, emulating those sweeping cuts of the Beeching years, Dr. Beeching in the 1960s, making it harder for people to access our railways. Well, Madam Deputy Speaker, I do not support any of those options. Which leaves us with a fourth option: modernise the railways. Make it more productive and get the industry of taxpayer-funded life support. But make no mistake, we're a government that profoundly believes in our railways. That's why we've reopened abandoned routes. It's why we've electrified thousands of lines and thousands of miles of lines. Not just the 63 lines that they managed to electrify over 13 years. When we got behind projects like HS2, the Elizabeth Line, the Northern Powerhouse Rail. And we're rolling out contactless to 900 more stations, digital signalling across the network. That's why we're transforming the industry through Great British Railways, ending the fragmentation and putting passengers first. But we need the industry to help with that transformation. I will give way to the right honourable gentleman.
He quite rightly said that billions were pumped into the railways during the COVID pandemic. and that kept the system going, and a lot of people worked very hard to keep it going. The rail delivery, the rail companies, the train operating companies, were preserved and supported and did very well during that period, as did many others in the private sector. So why is he now punishing those people that kept the railway system working, that do all the difficult jobs on the railways, all a variety of them, with job losses, inadequate pay, and a loss of morale? Should he not listen to and talk to their representative unions about the real situation on the railways and work with them to ensure we have an effective, efficient, and secure rail system for the future?
I do pay tribute to the workers on the railway who kept things running through a lot of taxpayer funded cash during the pandemic. He's absolutely right. But he talks about adequate pay. I should remind him and the whole House that a train driver has a median salary of £59,000. That compares with a nurse at £31,000, a care worker at £21,000. And I hear they say, well, that's the train drivers. But even if you take the median within the rail sector itself, it's £44,000, significantly, significantly above the sums of money which are paid in the medium average in this country, and what's more, sums of money which went up much faster over the 10 years compared to the rest of the country. Again, a 39% increase over the last 10 years for train drivers. That compares with, for example, 7% for police officers and 16% for nurses. So a good package, absolutely, but we need to get this railway functioning for everybody in this country. I give way to my honourable friend.
He's absolutely right that the railways need to modernise coming out of the pandemic. And is it not extraordinary that just as that confidence has been put in place, it's going to be destroyed by these strikes and the movement? And can he agree with me that this is exactly the wrong time, both for our economy and for our railways, for these strikes to be happening?
Well, my old friend's absolutely right. These discussions were underway when suddenly the union decided it would ballot its member, telling them incorrectly that it was to get them off a pay freeze. The pay freeze, which was across all of the public sector, nearly every part experienced a pay freeze, was in any case coming to an end. These are entirely pointless, counterproductive strikes. They should never have been called, and the party opposite should recognise that fact. I will give way.
Precisely because of the potential disruption, instead of calling today's debate, shouldn't he be taking action to try to help to resolve these disputes? When did he last meet with industry leaders and with trade unions to try to get that resolution?
Exactly.
And has he had a discussion about bringing in ACAS to resolve this dispute? And if he hasn't, will he commit to doing so now?
I hear what the honourable lady says. It's noticeable that the leader of the opposition, who claims to care deeply about this, is not with us today. The Prime Minister has already said exactly where he is on this issue. The leader of the opposition can't find his way to the front bench. Where is he? And in answer to the Honourable Lady, the leader of the RMT, Mick Lynch, says, and I quote, only last month, I do not negotiate with a Tory government. He doesn't want to leave with us. That is the reality of the situation. I give way.